Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrate the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings and welcome to Voice of Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus.
And I'm Athena Victory.
And we are on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, or CERN for short. Tonight we have a special guest, Rev Kev O'Kane, a legend in the field of past life regression and part of the New York Association for Research and Enlightenment. And tonight's topic will be Atlantis, the Edgar Cayce revelations. I welcome you, Rev Kev.
Hello.
How are you? Can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Oh, yes, I can. Good. Yeah.
Fantastic. We finally connected. Welcome to our show.
Well, I thank you.
I was just sharing.
Glad to be here.
Thank you, that you are a legend in the field of past life regression, as well as being part of the ARE in New York.
Hello?
Hi, we seem to be having microphone difficulties.
Maybe, I don't know. It's cutting out a little, yeah. So, what was the question you asked about the ARE of New York?
I just informed our guests that you are a legend in the field of past life regression, as well as a respected member of the New York ARE.
Yep. I've been there for about, it's been there for 19 years and a few months. And I've been there for 19 years and a few months. I got there 1 month after it opened.
Wow.
And I haven't left.
So what in your journey brought you to the ARE? You've been there for nearly 20 years. What led you there?
Edgar Cayce. The fact that 20 years ago, people didn't talk about psychic stuff and weird stuff like that. That is just normal, everyday stuff to us. So I needed a place that talked about that stuff because I was feeling it grow in me. So I found the Edgar Cayce readings. I found his the book of his biography, There Is a River, and I read it three times in a row, and it just totally opened me up. And so I called Virginia Beach, and they told me that there was a New York center that just opened.
Isn't that a wonderful feeling where your soul finally finds its home?
It's got to be God-centered, you know. God did it for me. So that's great. It is a wonderful feeling. People come in all the time and say that. They say, I don't know anybody else I can speak to this stuff about. speak to about this stuff, I mean, you know. And so they feel that they found a home.
We find that when we do the Center for the Study of Living Myth, which is a recurring workshop that we have in the Creskill Library. Creskill is one of the nearby towns to Tenafly, which is where we reside. And we cover different psychic topics, and the most recurring comment that we get from people is that they came there to check it out, but also to find other people that they could talk to about this stuff, because as you say, it's difficult even now to find people that will openly discuss it with you, that haven't formed an opinion, you know, that it's either hogwash or they're true believers. So it's really difficult to find other people and converse and explore and mutually learn from. So I'm glad you found that.
Well, thank you. I am too, believe me. Yeah,
so
my whole life has changed in the past 20 years since getting there. I used to be an attorney.
Really?
Yeah, I was a divorce attorney. And I was extremely, extremely unhappy. Now I make less money, but I'm very happy.
So how did you go from attorney to reverend?
Well, I was extremely unhappy as an attorney, and so I went looking for something else. I found hypnosis. Hypnosis led me to a greater view of the world and the universe, and then I got the calling just about 10 years ago, and I studied for 2 years to become a reverend.
With the ARE?
No, upstate in Lilydale, New York.
I see.
Yes.
So
I'm a spiritualist minister.
That is awesome.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Back
Thank
to
you.
Spiritualism changed our perception of reality very profoundly, especially in its early days.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It parted the veil and showed us that those that we loved and believe lost are not that far away from us.
That's for sure. They're not far away at all. We could reach out and touch them. It's just that we don't know it. So what the mind can conceive can't be done. So if you can conceive something, it can be done.
Edgar
it's
Casey
amazing.
Also spoke of past lives, his own past lives, as well as the past lives of others that came and consulted him or were being consulted about. Was that your doorway into exploring past lives?
No, it wasn't, actually. There's only one esoteric belief I've had all my life. From the moment I've been born, I believed in past lives. I just didn't know that other people didn't believe in it until I got to be about 10 years old. And all my life I had told people I was born April 1st, 1861. And they always laughed and patted me on the head like a cute kid, you know. When I was 10 years old, my mother finally said, Kevin, you're old enough, stop it. And that made me understand that people didn't believe in past lives, but I always did. I met somebody that I had an instant love for, and it freaked me out. So I went to a past life regressionist, and the rest is history.
That is awesome.
Yep. It was really cool. It changed my life.
What I found in my past life explorations... and there was a point in my life when I really, really devoted a lot of time to that type of exploration. One of the most frustrating things was even when you enter the memory stream of a past life, things like what your name is or what day it is or, you know, mundane type of things like that that we don't normally think about. Weren't accessible. Instead, I got like a 3D sense around experience. But it was what was thought and felt at the time. I wasn't able to, step back and extrapolate more information that I could see. Sometimes the information through research, came up, and then other times, frustratingly, it didn't. So I have no idea what exactly I was experiencing while I was experiencing it. I've since found, in exploring my own life through meditation, that you actually can take a step back and view yourself viewing yourself, and then extrapolate more specific information from there. And for this next round of past life exploration that we're planning for the end of 2016, I intend on experimenting with that technique again with the past life regression. But have you found techniques for moving past that point?
Yes, definitely. To retrieve greater information, which I tell you the truth, I don't go after it that often, because most people don't need that. I'm concerned with healing people,
you know,
with holdovers from the past that are affecting this life in a negative way, or perhaps they are holding something that is actually good for them in this life, and they just want it bigger and larger. So I help them with that. But every now and then people do want specific information like where, when, who, and stuff like that. And I have found that it is actually pretty easy to get those things. I think it has a lot to do with the expectation of myself. When I expect the client to be able to do something, they're able to do it. When I don't expect it, they're not able to. So, for instance, when I first started, I didn't know how far I could push people, their conscious minds and their subconscious and superconscious minds. So they didn't go very far. But nowadays, I know I can ask them to go anywhere, and they will.
Awesome.
And so they get any information they want. It's fantastic.
So the limitation is in the mind, then?
That is correct. The limitation is in the mind of either the patient or the leader of the session.
Thank you. You've given me a valuable tool for my upcoming explorations.
No, you're welcome.
We've been focusing on Atlantis a lot, and we've even had a Mythic Atlantis event, and now we're planning our second one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in the middle of a reliving of Atlantis, as the Unarians call it, and other people are resonating with it and becoming a part of it in a small or great way, depending on their closeness to where we are geographically and how strong the call is. Edgar Cayce had a lot to say on Atlantis. Can you give us an overview?
He certainly did. In fact, there are four circulating files that's compilations of his readings on specific subjects. Four files are on Atlantis. No other subject has four files. It is he did many readings just on Atlantis, because of course when he was reading, it was still pretty much poo-pooed by almost everybody except for the so-called fringe people, you know.
Ignatius Donnelly also did a lot to bring it to popular attention. He was a politician, metaphysician, and
yes.
His book was How Speculative.
Mm-hmm. In 1932, Cayce did a series of 16 readings that were just about Atlantis. And almost everything that he said about Atlantis happened during that time. But he actually mentioned Atlantis the first time during a life reading he gave in 1923. Life readings are readings of the evolution of your soul. And so he will mention past lives and how they affect this life. And he mentioned that the person that was having the reading was in Atlantis, and it was the first time he ever read about it or heard about it, because he never remembered what he said. So he would read the notes afterwards that other people made, and he was like, Atlantis? That doesn't exist. And
I can sympathize with that.
Go on, please. I'm sorry.
No, I can sympathize with that. Back in the days when I did readings, a lot of times material used to come through me that afterwards it's like, I don't believe this. You know, those kind of things on outer space and other planets, and it's like what we were learning in school is dramatically different. Although in time, a lot of that material has been vindicated because now with newer instruments and better ways of collecting data, we're finding that a lot of the material in these readings is frightfully accurate, and it was given during a time that there was a lot of resistance to receiving it.
Yep, that's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah, these reading, he was the first one in many, many years to mention the Essenes and how he mentioned how important they were to Christianity. And everybody thought that that was wrong. The historians said they were a tiny little sect that had nothing to do with Christianity. And it was proven when the Dead Sea Scrolls were found that the Essenes had a lot to do with the founding of Christianity and with what Jesus taught and talked about. Have you read the book Atlantis by Shirley Andrews?
No, I can't say that I have.
Well, 19 years ago, that book first came out. And I did a group regression, 63 people, back to Atlantis. And then she discussed with them what came out of their voyages. It was so wonderful and interesting. It was really, really, really cool. And I'll just tell you about one man's experiences that he talked about.
Okay.
He was the man like at a modern airport who would wave in with using lights, would wave in spaceships. And he said that they were not the way we think of spaceships. They were not metal discs. They were living creatures with people from other planets inside them, and they didn't travel through space. They traveled through dimensions.
And that approximates very closely where our thoughts are taking us today in terms of quote-unquote UFOs.
Right, it makes you question or look at everything in a different manner. You know, it's possible. I don't know. Maybe back then they didn't have the way to transport metals through dimensions, but now they do. So maybe now they don't use living ships, but they did then. And for years I was wondering about that, and I kept on going into meditation after meditation after meditation, and I finally got stuff about that, and that's how they did it. And I also, Casey was talking about transportation that they used in Atlantis between large distances and even to other countries, and they used things that were akin to balloons, like they would take a large creature's skin, like an elephant, and put gases in it, and then hang a wicker basket from it, and let people travel long distances through the air. I think that's so cool. It's so exciting to me to hear about these things. It's like, you know, this is right. This is, you know, this was our beginning. But also, it is our hope, our future, our development. We're moving towards that again.
I feel that very strongly, that we are indeed moving towards the new Atlantis, and that we are the Atlanteans. That
they, yes, Casey even said that. Casey even said that. He said that there are many, many Atlanteans. We've come back. Atlanteans as a group have come back many times during Earth's history at times when light bearers were needed to fight the darkness. And a lot of Atlanteans that were dark had come back and caused problems. So the light bearers had to come back to get rid of them, just like with the Nazis and the Axis. The Nazis and the good guys, whoever the good guys were. Oh, the Allies, right.
The Allies.
Yeah. You know, and he said that we're coming back now to help the world get ready for the next dimension.
I certainly resonate very strongly with that. And during my talks, people resonate with the legends of old Atlantis, and we've created the same world. Everything mm-hmm. from the genetic engineering to the possibility of animal-human hybrid slave mutations. We're in the process of doing that, and secretly it's been done. So we're bringing back Atlantis. We're bringing back the land that inspired the myths, and it contains warnings. And
yes.
These, I feel,
yes.
that we're not heeding. It's a mirror that we can look into and see ourselves and question the direction we're going. And Mythic Atlantis and Star Center Atlantis and all the Atlantean initiatives that we've started are designed specifically to do that. And we hope it's not too little too late, but we really do need to look at ourselves, face ourselves as we are, and question the things that we're doing, because the world we're creating in antiquity was destroyed, and we don't want that again.
That's right. That's right. But it's the same exact things are going on now and have been going on throughout history that were in Atlantis, but there was a microcosm, and now it's become more of a macrocosm. The whole thing about atomic energy began on Atlantis, and that's what caused the third destruction with atomic energy. And slavery was a big issue on Atlantis at that time because of the animals that were turned into hybrid humans so that they could serve as slaves.
And we've been talking about doing such things. I know that in the a lot of the sites where we're talking about genetics and eugenics and so forth, there has been conversation as to, hey, wouldn't it be a great idea if we did that? Wouldn't it be a great idea if we brought back animals long extinct? You know, these are things that we're playing with and we've made progress on.
Isn't that scary, though? I mean, how can they call that progress when it's really like de-evolution in many ways, you know? I mean, yes, on one hand, it is progress, and because it's more knowledge, and if we used it for good, it could actually help things. But on the other hand, when you have people who are, you know, the 99% versus the 1%, blah, 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 you know, when you have people like that, the corporate thinkers who think of nothing but money, then you're talking about, well, okay, they're the ones that are getting all of these advancements, and they're the ones that are going to be misusing them.
And that's
scary.
It is scary.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the things, the animal-human hybrids, and I brought up a little bit about them as well. Would you care to elaborate on them a little bit more for folks who aren't familiar?
Oh, sure, sure. There were animals on the Earth before there were humans. You know, before we came down from heaven, as it were, or the divine worlds, or whatever you want to call it, right? Before we came to Earth, there were animals. So the animals were here. Many angels, as it were, would come down to the third dimension just for fun, because they had never experienced third dimension, and they would enter things like blades of grass and trees and water and air and animals and stuff. And so they had to lower their vibrational rate to get into the third dimension. Then they had to raise their vibrational rate to go back home. Well, after having done this for so long and so often, it became harder and harder for them to raise their vibrational rates, and finally they were stuck on the third dimension. And so then some others were asked, basically, to come down and help those others back up there. And we said, sure, why not? We thought it was going to be a very fast thing. Like, we're going to go down there, help these people with our energy, just pick them up and let's go. That's it, right? Well, that didn't go like that. The longer we stayed on the third dimension, the denser our bodies got. And the denser our bodies got, the less we had energy to lift ourselves up. So we became stuck down here too. And that's when God decided to start using the earth as an experimental place to develop souls and spirits rather than just a place to have fun with, which is what he did when he created it, really.
So the earth and third dimensional life, and this is current in many different philosophies and religions, was what we would today consider like an immersive video game almost.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I like that. Yeah.
And our son has Minecraft and similar types of things where you could actually build a world and then create like little people and populate it, and you could experience things out of their eyes. And a lot of the games allow you to do this. And now the technology is making this more immersive and more 4D, and they're even starting to blend in movie technology. So very soon, we will have that capacity, too, to create worlds, illusory worlds out of light, which
exactly.
is basically what you're doing, and then to immerse ourselves in it, and people might get stuck and not want to leave the video game world.
That's right. In fact, it'll probably become a part of the DSM in the DSMR in the future. You know, it's like people will be called psychotic because they get caught in their made-up worlds.
Very true. And some people, some of the advantages that have been touted are, as in your imagination, you can explore being different types of people and doing different things that don't really have consequences in the reality beyond the game, but within the reality, they can have disastrous consequences.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. That's the heart of what Casey used to say about people's lives. He would say, you gained there or you went backwards there. That's it. It's like just creating empty calories, as it were, or an empty life, is by doing busy work but not doing anything real. So those people that would do that would be doing busy work but not doing anything real. One of my favorite quotes of Casey is, you have to be good, but you have to be good for something.
Very wise words.
Yeah. Well, when he was, as his five-year-old son said, I'm going to paraphrase a little. As his five-year-old son said when he was blinded, Dad, when you're asleep, you're the wisest man in the world.
And for Casey, that was true.
Yes, that's right.
One of the things we didn't get to tonight that we'll start with next time we talk together is the mysterious figure of Hermes. Now, Hermes is the father of Western mysticism.
Yes.
And the Hermetic writings form the bedrock foundation upon which all later systems were built. And Casey appears, Hermes appears in the Casey material as well as several other systems of channeled information. So we will start with Hermes next time. And I want to thank you very much for being on our show.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
And I look forward to personally meeting you. You're not that far away from where we are, so I'm looking forward to a cup of coffee and lots of constructive dreaming.
I would like that. I very much would like that. Bless you. Have a good night.
Bless you, too. How can folks get in contact with you, Rev Kev?
By giving me a call. Can I give my number?
If you'd like, sure.
It's 646-338-6715.
And how about the Edgar Cayce Association for Research and Enlightenment in New York? Is there a website?
There's a website called EdgarCayceNYC.org. And the phone number of the ARE Association of New York is 212-691-7690.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Be blessed and have a wonderful day.
You too. Bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow, that was interesting. You know, what music do you have planned for us today?
Well, our midpoint musical interlude will have more Dave the Bard with the Bonnie Black Hair.
Okay, here we go to Dawn.
The closer we get up, the better it feels. Well, the birds, they were singing in the bushes and trees. The song that they sang was, oh, she's easy to please. I felt her heart quiver, and I knew what I'd done. I said, have you had enough of the old sporting gun? Well, the answer she gave me, her answer was nay. It's not very often sportsmen like you.
Join us on International Pagan Radio. We air great artists such as The Dea and Shadows Dragon's Head.
Some of them come in the lonely, some of them stay for a spell, some of them stay for a message from the Oracle in the well.
Green Fortune.
I remember when I first walked in this garden. I, against my will.
David Wood.
Wild in me is the good in me.
Rising.
Lose yourself in rhythm, lose yourself in time, caught up in the spiral,
and many, many more.
Follow in the music, follow in the beat, dancing with...
Like our page and join our group on Facebook. InternationalPaganRadio.com, where it's all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
We're back. This is Hercules.
And Athena.
And you're listening to Voice of Olympus. Today, we are starting a brand new feature. We'll welcome you back a guest, Alfred Santariga, who is a psychic investigator and a cryptozoologist and a monsterologist. And he's out there dealing with the fringes of our reality continuously. Kind of reminds us of the old days, huh? Back in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Yes, we were investigating back then the squonk, the deer lady, peering shades, satyrs, and this strange creature that we call
the ninja possum.
Yes, it was a possum-type creature with glowing red eyes that slithered like a snake and chased generations of people in the Poconos.
Causing much fear.
And then there was the crawling hand octopus thing that people have been seeing for generations.
Oh, red hand, yeah.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fun investigating monsters for our Temenos, which is the Greek word for nemeton. And we look forward to the days when we can do that again. But in the interim, we will welcome back Big Al. Greetings, Big Al. How are you?
How you doing, Hercules? How you doing, Athena?
Good.
I'm doing good.
You're doing good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, you have investigated many strange things here in our local area, which is New York, New Jersey. Is that your territory?
Yeah, more or less. New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Absolutely.
Awesome. And you have investigated many strange creatures, including the one you're going to tell us about tonight, which is the insectoid.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I've done a couple of Bigfoot expeditions here in New York State. And as a kid, I had a Sasquatch experience down in South Florida in 74. But the insectoid thing kind of just came about because I was working and really didn't know what it was at all at the time. So it was very, very strange.
What did it look like?
Okay. Now, first time I seen it, I was trying to describe it to my brother, who's a parapsychologist and has been in the field for 40 years. The only way I could describe it at the time was it looked like the Green Goblin from Spider-Man. Remember the one where William Dafoe was the Green Goblin?
Yes.
If you ever see the Spider-Man shows. Well, that's what it looked like. It had green skin like a reptilian, but it stood up straight and it had the features of an ant.
Okay.
And I just came about, you know, I came across it by accident, to be honest with you. I was working down in the north end of Yonkers, which is a really upscale part of town on the Hastings border. And I was holding down this route and I would park my car at the beginning of the route and walk, you know, to the end of the route. And what I would do, instead of walking back along the street, because I would take the aqueduct behind these homes, the aqueduct ran from, they run it from the Catskills down to New York City. That's where they get the water from. And I would just take the aqueduct back to my car. It was a shortcut. And, you know, I noticed that the private homes along this area had really high fences, like 12-foot fences, and everybody had, like, killer guard dogs, you know, and as a mailman, it really made me nervous that everybody had like two Doberman pinschers and two German Shepherds, stuff like that. And I couldn't understand why, because it's a really low crime area and it's a really nice area, upscale area. And so I started talking to the neighbors, and one of the neighbors was I got a feedback. It's throwing me off. I'm sorry.
And one of the guys was a football player,
played for the New York Jets. And I started talking to him, and I said, you know, what's the deal with all these big fences and all these big dogs? And he said, well, you know, there's a creature that comes out of the woods at night, and it tries to break into people's homes and this, that, and the other thing. And he said one night he was went to the bathroom, and he looked out his back window, and he seen like a six-foot person jump over his fence. At the time he had a six-foot fence, and he called the police, and he grabbed a baseball bat. He went down to investigate, and when he put the porch light on in the backyard, the thing took off running. And when he see what it looked like, he was like just shocked. He didn't know what the hell it was. And the cops got there, and he said, you know, there was, and they said, oh, it was probably just a person. And then they opened up the back door, and they seemed like the door had been scratched, like almost clawed through at this point. And they said, well, then it's just an animal. Okay. Well, he said to me, he said, hey, I should talk to a woman down the block, this woman that they're called Big Mama. She ran a home for abused women. And she had an experience in her home one night. She had a pit bull, and she had locked up the house for the night. And the dog went crazy, ran to the back door, and something was scratching its way through the door. And the dog started fighting with the creature, and she ran down. She was beating the creature with the cane, and all the women came down, and they were beating the creature with, like, broomsticks and mop handles. But the dog really got mauled pretty bad, and they actually had to, when the police got there, they had to take the dog to all night animal shelter to save the dog itself. And she went on to tell me about this creature that lived in the woods. And so as I'm going along the route, I'm talking to more and more people. And I was talking to a couple of the maintenance people at the high-end condo at the end of the route. And I said to one of the Spanish guys, Luis, I said, hey, Luis, what's this thing I hear? I mean, I'm hearing about and this, that, and the other thing. And he said it was a chupacabra, and at that time I didn't know what a chupacabra was. So I talked to a few friends of mine that are from Puerto Rico, and they explained it to me. And I said, well, if this thing's 6 foot tall, it's no chupacabra. So anyway, one day I'm cutting through the aqueduct and back to my car, and I feel like something is following me, and I can't see it, but I know something is there. And it I just took off running. I ran to the car. I got to my car. I felt like once I got to the car, I was safe. A couple of weeks later, again, doing the same thing, cutting along the aqueduct, and I get that same feeling like something is following me. This time I say, you know what? I'm not going to run. I'm going to find out what this thing is. So I grabbed the mace off of my bag. I had two cans of mace with me. And I ran to a location on the aqueduct where I felt the creature was. And I sprayed all the woods down with the pepper spray, hoping to see like an outline of something. And I didn't really see anything. But, I went back to my car, and then another time, I was talking to a woman who was coming home one night, and she happened to park her car by the aqueduct. And when she got out of her car, she seen this creature with green eyes. The eyes flashed and start chasing her. She ran to her building, and the creature chased after her. Now, I don't know if it was something to do with her hormones or her menstrual cycle or something, but I had never heard of this creature attacking.
Why would that enter the picture?
Because this girl was a young girl, and she was out dancing all night. It was the wee hours of the morning, and she may have been sweating or something like that. And
so
why
would an insect be interested in her? Because if it was a mammal, like, okay, but for an insect, I don't know if that would actually, like, inspire an insect the same way.
Well,
if, like,
I mean, it's just a theory that I threw out there because I had never heard of this before. And this girl,
okay,
this thing chased her to her building, and she happened to have pepper spray on her keys, and it was trying to get in her front door, and she sprayed it down. And And that was what gave her the opportunity to actually get into the building to safety. And so then, you know, I'm talking to summer turns to winter, and I'm delivering the mail at the high-end building, and I noticed that when we delivered the mail in the lobby, we'd have to go upstairs and put the package in the front of all the doors. And the back end of these buildings had beautiful courtyards, pools on the roof, I mean, absolutely gorgeous apartments, and they all faced the aqueduct. But the back was all like, the breezeways were all glassed in, you know, weather protected. And I noticed that later in the around November and December, I noticed the kids, when they got home from school, instead of mulling around in the breezeway talking to each other, they would get out of the elevators and they would just run like a bat out of hell to their apartments. And I was like, what is going on? Why are all these kids so scared? And I noticed that the women who were coming home from work later would do the same thing. They would just put their heads down and they'd walk straight to the apartment. They wouldn't look out to the woods or anything like that. So, you know, again, I'm talking to Luis, and he's telling me that every now and then they find chairs, like people's furniture, patio furniture, out on the aqueduct facing the building, like one lone chair, like something was sitting in it all night just looking at the building. They told me they had to change all the sliding glass doors on that side of the building because of the patios were outside. They were open. And they were all wood, because whatever this thing was, it was trying to scratch its claw its way in. Now, I don't think that it was something that was that intelligent, because, you know, with its finger, it could probably have broken the glass and got into the apartment. But it would always try to scratch its way through the wood. So they changed all the doors and put all metal, like, frames around all the doors and everything. And actually, one time, Luis was up on the roof checking the chlorine in the pool, and he said he's seen something like swimming away from, like a wake from the water going away from him, but it was invisible. He didn't see anything, but he knew something was there, and something actually got out of the pool. He seen all the water splash like it was coming off of something, and then he seen footprints go to the edge of the building, and he said the footprints he described either to be like alligator or lizard kind of footprints, he said. And he said he doesn't know if this thing jumped off the building and down into the aqueduct, which is like a six-story building, or if it climbed down the patios, you know, the wooden patios and everything. But it freaked him out. He was deathly afraid of it. So one day I'm delivering the packages in a building, and I just get the vibe that something is staring at me, you know. And I just like, okay. So I turn around and I look in the area where I feel this thing is staring at me. I don't see anything there. Whatever this creature is, it's able to cloak itself in like an invisible kind of cloak, like almost like the Predator thing where it could bend the light, you know? And
okay.
I'm staring down basically at the aqueduct, you know. And I don't know if there's anything there or not, but my gut, my intuition is telling me there's something looking at me. And after about 15 minutes of just looking at it, it flashed its eyes, and its eyes were green. And I guess it was just giving me a little thing saying, yeah, I'm here, and I'm looking at you, and I know you're looking at me. So I was like, okay, pretty cool. You know, I actually felt this thing looking at me, so I knew it was there. So those two times when I was on the aqueduct and I felt something was following me, this thing was probably following me down the aqueduct for whatever reason, I don't know. Go ahead.
So, okay. So basically near the aqueduct, I've been to the aqueduct when I was a kid. I remember many times. It's been many years, though, since I was a kid. Near the aqueduct, there is a creature that is in some ways insectoid and in some ways reptilian.
And right. I would definitely call it insectoid, but it just had a reptilian looking skin.
Okay. And it has so far alarmed people, and it's caused minor property damage. And it can cloak itself. And in one instance, somebody ran away and it started chasing her.
Chase the woman, out of the car, yeah. Excuse me?
So how would folks protect themselves from something like this? Like,
Nathan Pepper seems pretty well.
What the people who were living in the private homes did is they doubled their fences. Anybody who had a 6-foot fence got a 12-foot fence. And everybody got dogs. I guess for some reason this creature is afraid of dogs because everybody on this block had, like I said, a Rottweiler, a Mastiff, a German, I mean, just big guard dogs, you know, or two pit bulls. I mean, so that's the way they protected them because everybody's back gate led to the aqueduct because that's where everybody would walk their dog. So, and, you know, and I guess this thing was afraid of dogs. You know, like I said, when the pit bull latched onto this creature's arm, okay, when it was coming through the door, because it had actually gotten through this woman's door, and the pit bull latched onto its arm. With the other arm, it was clawing the pit bull's head and stomach and chest and everything, but the dog wasn't letting go. It was holding on for dear life. And when the old lady, Mrs. Smith, who I call Big Mama, she told the dog to let go, and the dog eventually let go. The creature ran away screaming, had a high-pitched scream. And like I said, but she felt that the beating that the dog had taken had took years off the dog's life. That's how severe it was hurt.
Wow.
And this creature has long fingernails, like claws, claw-like fingernails. So she ended up getting another pit bull, a younger one, to be with the older one that was pretty, you know, badly beaten. And like I said, this is a high-end part of town. I mean, you know, the chief of police lives there, the lieutenant on the fire department, you know, executives, big money in this part of town. So, like I said, the crime is really low, and it just struck me weird walking down that aqueduct, seeing these high fences and these monster dogs. And I'm thinking, my God, if these dogs ever got out, I'm a dead man, you know, because I'm the mailman. All dogs hate mailmen, you know. And
even our chihuahua box of the mailman.
Oh, God, chihuahuas are the
worst. Yeah, we have a tiny chihuahua.
And
mailmen
are high on their bucklist. And yeah, absolutely. And, anybody. So,
now,
one, go ahead.
We're going. We are going to have you on to describe your many experiences. And next time you'd mention the Sasquatches, the Bigfoot, Yetis, the Captars. They have many different names in many different cultures. Before we wrap up with the insectoid in Greek mythology, and that is my, you know, particular passion and lifeblood, there were creatures called myrmidons.
It means
ant-men. And the ant-men were such fierce warriors that Achilles, who fought in the Trojan War, he named his warriors myrmidons. You know, they were like ant-men in his army. So the creature you're describing has mythic antecedents and that are hoary with age and predate our history. And they must have lived near enough Greek settlements where the ancients described them and told tales of them. They're also bee people, the Melises. And they had healing powers and they had these rituals that they did. But again, that's another insect, another tale. But insect people are known in mythology. So it's reassuring in a sense to know that they're still around. And I want to learn more about this insectoid at a later time. Now, you are an investigator pretty much a lot of the time now. And you had shared on the last show you were on that you've had psychic experiences since you were a child. You have a family member who's a parapsychologist. And that you've also grown up in a culture that's gadget-oriented. So you've taken the best of these and brought them to your own explorations. Did I get that right? Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, my mom would have premonitions, and I always got gut feelings, like intuitive feelings about things. And like I said, my brother's been a parapsychologist. He's been in the field for 40 years, and so, you know, it was pretty open in my house, and, you know, so, you know, it wasn't some like taboo or anything. Nobody hid it, but, you know, and I just all my life I've had a lot of strange experiences with different kind of cryptic creatures and, you know, UFOs and all kinds of stuff. And so I decided to put a team together. It's called the Bronxville Paranormal Society. You can find us. We have our own website at www.bronxvilleparanormalsociety.com, or you can find us on any of the social media sites. And, you know, I'm on Facebook if anyone wants to contact me personally, and Twitter. So, I mean, I'm out there. We're out there. We're doing, you know, we're doing investigations all the time. And just to wrap up this real quick with the insectoid thing,
sure.
At one point, I was at the building and I felt this thing looking at me again. So I said, okay. I went down into the courtyard and I sat down on a bench and I turned my back towards the aqueduct and I said, if you're here, show yourself to me. And I'm saying this like mental telepathy, you know, if you're here, show yourself to me. And after about 5 or 10 minutes, I got goosebumps down my whole body and I knew the creature was there. And I turned around, and it was standing on an 8-foot retaining wall on top of the aqueduct. And it was about 6 feet tall, so it was, like, pretty intimidating-looking kind of creature. But I'm a martial artist. I've taken martial arts my whole life. I'm very adept at taking care of myself. And I seen it standing at me, and I was looking at it. So I actually got up on top of the picnic table to make myself look bigger as well, because it was standing on an 8-foot wall looking down at me, so I wanted to kind of even it off a little bit. So I got up on the wall and I looked at him and he looked at me and we were just staring down at each other, and he was like jiggling his fingers because he had these really big claws on his fingers. And I grabbed the two cans of mace that I had in my bag and I kind of just sprayed an X in the air, not at it, but just like over it, just so that it would get the smell of the pepper mace. And when it did, when it smelled the pepper spray, it stepped back like 2 or 3 feet, you know. And I personally think that this thing is a cave dweller. And I never felt that it was like alien, like extraterrestrial. I felt it was a cave dweller, lived in a cave. And we know the woods behind this area had a lot of caves in it. There was a lot of devil's worshiping going on back there. There were tunnels that led underneath the road to the river when the moonshiners were running moonshine in the 30s and 20s and 30s. So there's a lot of caverns and stuff in this area. And I was just like mental telepathy. I'm looking at it, and it's looking at me, and I'm telling it, I'm not afraid of you. You can't intimidate me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to come back with more people who are like me, and we're going to find where you live, and we're going to find you because – you know, you're not going
to. So this is definitely a to be continued tale, and I look forward to future installments.
It wasn't really not to be continued. That was like, you know, 20 years ago now, and I never went back to look for it. But you know, because not too many people would understand it. You know, I had never heard of an insectoid or a reptilian until my brother told me about it. And he said, God forbid, he goes, whatever you do, don't tell anybody it's the Green Goblin. They'll think you're out of your mind, you know. And I was like, well, that's just the only thing that I could relate to explaining it to. I said, but, you know, now that I know about these insectoids and reptilians, I'll describe it the way that I did tonight. But I've never gone back, actually, to look for it. You know, life went on and just took different paths, and I've ended up on a whole different part of town. Now I'm not even in Yonkers anymore. I work out of Bronxville, so I'm nowhere near that area. But it was pretty strange, you know. And the funny thing about it is if you check the police records and everything, they got everything listed as potential break-ins or animal attacks. You know, they never put it down what it actually is. Just the people who report it always tell the cops what they've seen. You know, but the cops never put it down that way. They just say, you know, 6-foot male, you know, are trying to break a possible break in, something like that. But, you know, it was just a very, very strange looking thing.
On that note, we need to wrap up for tonight. Thank you so very much, Big Al, for sharing your experiences with us, and we look forward to hearing more.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, there are no CERN updates tonight. However, I would like to request a prayer and healing request for one of our friends, Dr. Sharon Bernstein of the Defining Moment Foundation in Englewood, New Jersey. Sharon, who's best known as Dr. B, is a truly awesome person and a very close friend. She recently suffered from a stroke and is now facing a dangerous procedure to remove a brain hemorrhage and repair some damage. This procedure is scheduled for tomorrow morning. Our prayers are with you, Sharon. We love you and need you here. And also I've been informed that Robin McKean from CERN, her mother also suffered a stroke. So prayers out to them. Terry and Robin have flown out to be with her. So our prayers go to the whole CERN family during this very difficult time. What we have coming up is, would you like to share, Athena?
We have Ishtar Fest on Saturday, June 18th.
And then we have the Center for the Study of Living Myth, the In-Between Realms on Thursday, June 23rd.
And then we have the Amber Dragon, the Seven Heavens, the Sun, on Saturday, June 30th of this year.
And if you want more information on our comings, our goings, and our many doings, you could check out our website, HTTP, what is that, colon, semicolon, see if you get it, the dot, dot, one dot on top of the other, two double slashes, www.herculesinvictus.net. And we're available for lots of cool things, which you can find on the websites. We do appearances, we do ceremonies, we investigate cryptids, we do storytelling, so you name it. If it's mythic, we do it.
And for contact and community, visit us on Facebook at Hercules Invictus, Mythic Atlantis, or The Voice of Olympus. Hercules and Athena are also available for Olympian workshops, mythic activities, as well as epic special events and appearances.
What I would like to do before closing is let you know what we're going to be doing next time. Next time, we're having a show called Atlantis Yet Lives. And we're going to have on my good friend Nick Curto from the New York Disclosure Network. And we're going to be hearing a lot of conspiracy theorists about how Atlantis did not fall, but the remnants of it are still here guiding our destiny, and that the powers that be know about this and are hiding from us. And I always have fun talking to Nick, so I'm looking forward to the next episode. Until then, joyous journeys, and have a pleasant week.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.